The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 25th of January, 2019. On the podcast today, I have David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil, UJO's ticker there, and David discusses planning at Wrestle, progress at Biscothorpe, and their farm-in to West Newton Gas Discovery. Plus, I also have Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals, EUZ, and Lawrence explains why they are delisting from the ASX and also updates on their operational progress. Also on the podcast, I have Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, and Russ talks about the Baltic Dry Index. It's a significant measure of economic health and also covers the following stocks: Keystone Law Group, that's Keys, ticker there, Medical Group, MGP, and Quixont, QXT. I also have two lists for you. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. And on the front page there, you can also see lots of other articles, content about companies, or in fact, just interviews and podcasts with investment professionals, market commentators there at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil. UJO is the ticker there. David, thanks for coming on the podcast. And Happy New Year, by the way. Haven't seen you in there. Haven't spoken to each other in 2019.
No, the year's dragging, isn't it? Good morning to you.
Yeah, you've been getting lots of news out. You're very busy. You've had some news out today, which is...
Let's hope it's all worth a wait. You know, last year was not a brilliant year for us. I think maybe that's an understatement. But we certainly got some activity now with the course of the news today of the planning extension, which is... I'm ecstatic about that. Of course I am.
Yeah. Do you know what, David? I don't think last year was a good year for many people, especially in the last quarter. I mean, a lot of small, you know, stock markets around the world went into a dive mode. So it's not very good. So hopefully we're starting on a positive. Well, we'll go into the news in a bit because there's three bits of news you've released since we last chatted. So we'll go into that. Before we do, as always, David, just a quick summary, please, for people not aware of Union Jack Oil. Just summarise what you're all about, please.
Yes, of course. Union Jack Oil is an AIM-listed, AIM-quoted, whatever you want to call it, oil production, exploration, development company. And what we do, we've got a great geologist, Graham Bohr, and he scans all the new projects coming along and what's for sale and what companies are farming out. And we try and take a percentage of that project, involve ourselves in it, become part of a JV, of which should have a meaningful effect on our company. And we've probably got about four or five of those now. And of course, our first ever discovery was Wrestle. We've got Biscothorpe drilling ahead now, and also very, very recently West Newton. So we're taking interest. We're not operators. We literally take an interest, we pay our way, and we're part of the end result, which is a well. We're normally very, very late stage, which means not as long as it could take. Still a long time, but it could be longer. So we go in more or less at the end of the cycle.
Which
works or can't work.
Okay, well, let's go into the news today, which is, I know, a welcome to many shareholders, because it's been very protracted, and it seems like, you know, the planning sort of North Lincolnshire Council there, planning committee, have been sort of rejecting applications when everyone else has been, you know, advising they go ahead. So tell us what's happening today. What's the news today?
Well, there are two situations. One is to extend... As you know, but this is a discovery. It's an actual oil well or discovery, and it needs to be able to be produced from. So the second part of this scenario is the council have also thrown out an application to produce. But this, for news today, is really, really excellent, because what it means, in reality, to be stark, we won't be ordering ready mix tomorrow. If you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So we've got a year now, and as I think all the shareholders and people that follow our company know, that we had the application to produce. This was thrown out, which I had to say I was ultra surprised at, because the council employed their own hydrologist to take a look at the application and comment, and the company, their independent consulting company, came back and couldn't find anything wrong. They said, you know, it looks like that all the planning inspectors' concerns from last time had been sorted out, done and dusted. You know, Egdon, as operator, did a cracking job this time on. So the independent audit people from the council effectively said everything good, this could be granted. The planning officer said, recommended it should be granted, and it still got thrown out. And, so that's the next appeal.
Yeah, and I don't understand, because the planning officer have recommended this for approval, not just this time, several times, haven't they? I mean, he's recommended it for approval, and yet the North Lincolnshire Council's planning committee has said no. They're taking advice from the people they should be. They're saying go ahead with it, and they're not taking that advice. I don't understand what's going on there. It's almost like some heads need to roll there to move it along.
I don't know. The last thing in the world I would do would be sort of ultra critical. They're all human beings, and you know, a lot of, you know, there are people, some people there that literally don't like oil and they think it's fright. You know, this is a pure conventional oil development plan. No fracking involved or anything was causing issue. There have been oil wells up in Lincolnshire in that area, and we operate. We've invested in two of them, Fiskerton and Kennington. And these wells have been around for donkey's years. Mm. And even some of them, just a bit lower down in Nottinghamshire, they went towards a war effort. I know I sound like an old fogey, which I probably am, but you know, these are just normal conventional wells. You can't even see the pump jack from the road. It's in the middle of nowhere. So you say you don't understand. I don't understand either. But hopefully the process will work. I can say that Egdon have done a cracking job last time on the application, and I was surprised. So hopefully we, during the appeal this time, everything will get sorted out and we can do what we're designed to do, produce oil.
Yeah, well, fair play. I mean, I've got to give it to you. I do respect your sort of, you know, how calm you are about it, because it makes my blood boil even just thinking about it. They take advice from experts. They do that. The experts tell them what they think, and they ignore it, which just makes me, it drives me insane. Anyway, so hopefully that's moving along, and hopefully.
Yeah, well, thankfully, Justin, there's a process.
Yeah, yeah.
And we use this process, and this time it worked. Which demonstrates that Egdon have done a good job.
Yeah. Well, let's go on to something, positive as well, something that's happening, it's actually going ahead, and that's, you mentioned, you announced the commencement of drilling operations at Biscothorpe on the 7th of January. Just take us through a bit of detail there. What's, what's the stake there for you? What's the reward there for you, potentially?
Well, the potential reward could be anything between, and I emphasise, could in capital letters. It could be anything between 14 million barrels and 42 million barrels. However, there could be another one as a little factor put in. There could be nothing there. You know, I'm not trying to frighten investors, but you know me. I try not to promote. I might have done the olden days, but not. You know, everyone's feet on the ground. We hope it works. The model looks terrific. We're drilling ahead, and a couple of weeks we'll know. It's as simple as that. You know, drilling's going, it's working. Rig's fine. We've had some good weather up there, cold. So fingers crossed, and that's all you can do.
Yeah, well, you mentioned in the RNS straight away, though, so up front, in the first line, you say 40% chance of success, but second paragraph, you do have so circa £24 million net to you if it's a goer. So that's it's a good little roll of the dice there.
That's just initially. That's just what it's worth in the ground. So that's twice our market cap.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And oil prices beginning to creep up again. It's quite healthy.
And she is saying 30 it is. And so you're saying, what, sort of time frame wise, 30 days, is it drilling? And that's from the 7th of January, that's right? Is that right?
Yeah, but maybe, you know, it might be sooner, it might be later.
Yeah.
It just, like, obviously, you're talking about things that are going over a mile underground, and things have to be done properly. You know, if anyone knows how an oil well is drilled, you case, you go down different diameters, and you put casing in to protect the well and the integrity, and the cement has to go off properly, make sure it's a good job. So, yeah, as long as it's safe. You know, the main thing here, everyone comes out without any injury, so that's it.
Okay, and the last bit of news we haven't talked about, which you released early December, was the completion of the farming to Peddle 183, containing the significant West Newton gas discovery. Just take us into that briefly, if you could, David.
Yeah, it's a nice deal. It's got a competent person's report, 189 BCF. And as I said, everyone's expecting drilling in Q1. There's work ongoing. I think Twitter's gone mad with photographs. Somebody's got a blinking drone, not flying over it. But we shut the rig down, but that's a quip. But somebody goes up with a drone, takes pictures, and I was up there myself last week. Great operation. They've got the cellar in, they're laying conductor pipe at the moment, and once all that's done, be ready to roll on that. That's significant. It's a different sort of, we've never been involved in a project potentially as big as that. It's one of the biggest licenses in the UK, and interesting. That's all I can say. Good people, a Canadian group running it, a company called Raflin Energy, and they're sick.
Yeah, cool stuff. All right, well, there's lots going on, David, and like you say, you're keeping busy, always on the lookout as well, I suspect, for other things. But, you know, if people are listening to this right now and not following the story, give them, you know, in summary, David, three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Right, I can give you three reasons, but what I will say is, as always, this is still speculation. Always will be. With any company, any oil producer, you've got a whole bunch of things can go against you. But on the plus side, I believe that we're very, very transparent on the way we operate. And investors, and over the years of Union Jack, I think we've built quite a lot of trust with people and investors. News flow, bags of that, you couldn't wish for more. And like, even myself, I'm finding it difficult to keep up with, you know, but it's about time. You know, it's like number nine buses. You can wait 2 days for one, and then a whole bunch of them come along. So news flow, especially. Like, I've never known a situation since my corporate days started where we've been involved doing something like this, wells being drilled and everything that's happening. You know, it's active. And finally, we always try and do what we say on the tin. It doesn't always work. That's what oil exploration and development is all about. But we always try and do what we say on the tin.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous, Dave. Good to chat to you as always. And hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals. EUZ is the ticker there. Lawrence, thanks for joining me.
Brilliant. Thanks, Justin.
Now, you've had some news out about delisting from the ASX, and we'll talk about that in a bit and what that means and significance of that and why you're doing it. Before we do, as always, if someone just started investing this year, Lawrence, and they're looking around, listening to podcasts and stuff, and so they come across this podcast, they know nothing of Europa Metals, just summarise Europa for them, please.
Absolutely. Lead, zinc, silver project operating in Spain. Very good, focused, high-grade lead, zinc, silver resource. And also we popped some copper out the ground, which we're quite interested in at the end of last year. And basically, we're moving towards feasibility study now.
Yeah, okay, excellent stuff. Now, you've done an application for removal from the official list of the ASX. Now, you are listed on three markets. So it's AIM, is South African, Johannesburg, and there's Australian exchange as well. So first of all, you know, you came to the business that was listed on these markets anyway, so you didn't actually do this. But so tell us, you know, what's the explanation behind the listing of three different markets, and then why now are you coming off them?
No, so it's a legacy of being an iron ore company that was in an Australian iron ore company that had assets in South Africa at the time, and to a degree still today, the UK is really the place for African assets. Not always, but possibly more than Australia. So the company came to London and listed there, and then to do with, frankly, reasons, black empowerment, and exchange controls in South Africa, it listed on the main board of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So those are the legacy reasons.
Yeah, yeah. So there is always a primary listing, isn't there? So it was ASX your primary listing, is that right?
It was. It was the primary listing. And then because we're also on the JSE main board, which demands it takes precedence over any other country's secondary board, we're obviously delisting, or no, we're moving from the JSE at the same time to the junior stock exchange of the JSE. So the net result is, yes, we'll still have some Johannesburg listing because, quite frankly, it's just too expensive and complicated and a waste of shareholders' money to just come off it completely. So that will just tick along. But AIM will be our sole focus. Those regulatory regimes will be reporting under most of our shareholdings on AIM. We kept the ASX to give us some optionality, but it was always a debate we had. But then, frankly, looking at last year and listening to shareholders' feedback, it was time to come off. So that's pretty much what we've been working on over the last month and a bit. And I think the advisors and our company secretary have done a fantastic job in getting us to this point.
Yeah, so... Yeah, take us through a bit. I assume it just simplifies, you know, the business, and therefore the costs as well come down, and I suppose the volume is, like I say, mainly on AIM, isn't it? So that's where most of your shareholders are. And are there any other sort of benefits I'm missing out on here?
Well, to be honest, Justin, you're probably missing out the key benefit, but that's no fault of yours.
Go on.
So the costs, I mean, the AIM costs are always quite high, to be honest, because you're paying a nominated advisor, which is great, and we have a very good nominated advisor. I'm not knocking that. And the costs are actually quite low for the ASX, but we do get rid of them, so that's great. The key thing is, frankly, you know, we're not in Australia. We'll still be going to Australia to talk to Australia companies, and we'll still... end up being an Australian registered company. So we'll hit all those compliance issues quite rightly and regimes. But what it will mean is that we, as a listed entity, we move completely away from the ASX regulatory regime as long as we aren't doing too many things in Australia.
yeah, absolutely. And so when are you hoping you'll be removed if everything goes too smoothly?
Well, we've set out the schedule, but we're hoping end of February, beginning of March. But just to touch on the previous point again, because, sorry, it's early and it's been a long night, is the key thing, and let's just say it up front, is, you know, we all have experience of operating on the ASX, but it has a heavy regulatory burden. And to run three exchanges, we just need to simplify everything. And, you know, the state we got ourselves into at the end of the last year with the scoping study, where we believed we'd be able to report numbers to a degree and then weren't, you know, we don't want that to happen again. We don't want to keep coming up against issues where we can't report full detail to the shareholders because ASX and ASIC, for them, quite correctly say, no, this is how we interpret it, the rules. Our shareholders are on AIM. We want to report to an AIM UK regulatory regime for resource reporting. We'll still be doing JORC 2012. We'll still be doing everything properly. It just means there'll be a slightly different approach while being totally correct and using competent persons about how we can talk about Terral, which is a great asset.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? Just if you could touch on, I don't know if you can say this, but I've seen some people mention already on this report on social media saying that now you're off the ASX, now you've released a scoping study and you couldn't release certain figures, of course, the figures, the economics around it, and that disappointed quite a lot of people. The share price took a knock, and now people are saying now you may be free through that regulation, so you can release those figures. Is that correct?
Well, that's certainly for the future something we have in mind. But, you know, Justin and the shareholders, I'm just going to ask one thing. Let's just get to the end of this delisting process for the ASX. We've got, a really good working relationship with the ASX. We want to do everything properly. We want to get to the end of this process. It's been managed in a very professional manner by our Australian team. So for the long term, yeah, that's certainly what we're looking at, is being able to report to an AIM regulatory process. We'll still be an Australian registered company, but certainly at the end of this process of delisting and move from the JSE, we'll be looking at how we're reporting news. But just for the time being, we just want to quietly get on with delisting from the ASX and making sure everything's being done properly and that we seem to be doing everything properly.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Just one final thing. Obviously, I can't let you go without just asking you, operationally, how's it all going there at Terral?
Operationally, it's great as ever. So we're on calls all of today. Hopefully we shall update the market soon. Data reinterpretation continues. We've been doing a lot on, frankly, the development work, i.e. the land changes, how that process we announced last year about just going through the processes to get all the relevant changes for the land, which we're very happy about. And we're also just about to finish, well, I think we are, find out on the call later, and the mapping campaign and also some data reinterpretation work. So looking at the surface expressions, and also, you know, we're still looking at that core and having a look at what that core means, and also some of the things that came up last year. You know, that silver high grades on the extension drilling is still very interesting to us. We've had some very interesting feedback with some groups during the Christmas period, but just before and afterwards. They've given us some interesting things that we're having a looking at pursuing. You know, there's that copper intersection, very just one really at the moment, but it's certainly giving us some thoughts at the moment about how we go forward. Busy at the moment. And there we are.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Well, one final thing you know about this, Lawrence, and if someone is listening for the first time and not following you yet, not following the story, but likes the sound of what you're doing, give them three quick reasons, Lawrence, in summary, why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Our asset, our main asset, which we're wholly focused on, the Terral asset, is deliverable. It's high grade. It's got potential for great margins. It can be doing production within a couple of years. This type of asset, you know, can be fast track, and such a robust asset, you know, it works at a lower zinc price than many in a politically stable country like Spain, in a region of Europe which needs zinc amongst others. We are building a gift which can be put into production either by us or if another group wanted to JV with us and bring it forward, or any other such options. You know, this can be done. That's the point about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Lawrence, thanks for chatting, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future, fella. All right.
Fantastic. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. You know, I do this, like I said, I mentioned in the morning I do a 60-second podcast, or try to be 60 seconds. I never quite make it. But it's called Five Things to Know Before the Market Opens.
Yep.
And I'm coming across increasing signals of global growth slowing down. Two more signs a day, pretty much. I mean, the German government has cut their GDP forecast from 1.8 to 1%, which is a massive cut.
No, that is a big change. Yeah, if it was 1.8 to 1.7, I don't think I'd have opened the news. Paper, but no, that's quite a big jump.
Yeah,
decline, I should say.
Yes, and also today as well, the Baltic Dry Shipping Index, which I know it sounds quite dry in its title, you know, but
boom.
People are saying it's a very good indicator because it's essentially ships around the world, all the sort of steel making, coal, all the stuff needed to make stuff, you know.
Yep.
And so when these rates go down, it's not very good, and that's down since mid 2018. It's down by 47%, I think, which is also a massive drop. So what is it significant, Russ?
It can be. I mean, again, there's no such thing as a fail-safe indicator. We'd all be millionaires by now, wouldn't we? Because it'd be dead easy. But the Baltic Dry can be a good indicator. As you say, it's bulk shipping, so it's iron ore, it's coal, it's steel, really important stuff for the world economy. So you do need to pay attention when it softens. I mean, we have to be a little bit careful here because shipping is a very cyclical business.
Yeah.
And yes, you have swings in end demand, but you also have huge swings in supply.
Yeah.
So you can have very, very strong global economy and very strong demand, but if some clown's built too much capacity, as has been known to happen in the past, the Baltic Dry Index could be going down because of oversupply, even though the global economy is strong. So we've always got to bear that in mind. One thing that is just worth... So we need to be a little bit careful, but one thing that's worth looking at is there are some bulk dry and container shipping companies that are quoted. Now, the one sort of shipping stock that I use is the world's largest container shipping company now, so that's a bit different from dry bulk, but it's A.P. Møller-Mærsk. It's quoted on the Copenhagen Stock Exchange.
Møller-Mærsk,
You see the containers all, every day on the streets, on the back of trucks or on trains
massive.
Or on ships. Yeah. Huge company. Now, if you know, we can do this at another time, but if anybody wants to draw the share price of A.P. Møller-Mærsk on the Copenhagen Exchange against the MSCI World Index, you might find, you might consider that there's a possible correlation between the two. Now, again, it's not flawless. In 2017, A.P. Møller-Mærsk's share price held up extremely well, actually went up a lot. That's partly because under a new chief executive, a guy called Søren Skou, he's actually been breaking the company up. He spun off its oil exploration and oil businesses to make it a more pure play on shipping. Now, so that actually broke the relationship between the two, but it seems to have reestablished itself since 2018. A.P. Møller-Mærsk gone from around 11,500 to 9,000 Danish kroner, and the MSCI World's gone down around 10%. If you look at the chart, that link's reasserted itself. So, you know, if you are looking for a bit of a crude, touch-me-feely five things on a morning test, have a look at the A.P. Møller-Mærsk share price run against the MSCI World. And at the moment, it's looking a bit soggy, which very much tallies with what we're hearing in terms of, you know, global economic chat, whether it's from politicians, whether it's from the Time Wasters in Davos, or whether it's from companies like Intel, which had a big profit warning last night, the world's leading manufacturer of silicon chips. And they blame not just smartphone softness, but they also blamed weakness in servers and cloud computing, which I think is a new trend. So that's something we need to be aware of. Surprise, surprise, the company said, don't worry, it'll all be all right in the second half. Mm-hmm. So let's hope that they're right. But that's normally sort of the slightly last vestige of the scoundrel when, you know, you're all feeling around trying to work out what's going wrong. Oh, don't worry, it's just a blip, it'll be okay in the second half. We've heard it all before. Sometimes it's right. More often than not, it's not.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm looking at the Maersk share price going back to 2000.
And
if you look at it, right, basically, it seems like above 10,000, it seems quite bullish. And these are the years where, 2003, 2006, and 2007, and they're above 10,000. And then on the big dips, you see go below 10,000, almost down to 5,000. But at the moment, we are at 8,100. So we are below 10,000 level. It seems like
it's got me thinking, I can assure you. So, so keep an eye on your Danish shipping companies, dear listeners.
Yeah, cool.
Sounds a bit eclectic, but it can be quite effective.
No, I know, but I think when you get those sort of, news coming to the top of financial news, because like I say, it is quite an obscure index for many people, it was at the top of sort of Reuters, you know. I think the fact that it's dropped so much, I mean, if it dropped like a 10-20%, fair enough, but 47% is a big drop, you know.
And if you draw the chart further back, the Baltic Dry did drop like a rock in 2007 before everything went wrong, so it was quite a good guide then.
Okay, cool. Well, that's the macro day. Yeah, I always think that, you know, because you mentioned it, it's stuck in my head, this, Russ. A lot of things you say stick in my head, but specifically you said about George Soros, of course, if people don't know who he is, one of the best sort of traders, yeah, investors in the world, or one of the richest anyway, and I suppose it's the mark of success. But he likes having the bear case put on any of his investments, because I suppose it's about looking at known unknowns. If you know about all the unknowns, you know, sort of then... You know, what can you fully researched, aren't you, essentially? You know?
Yeah. It's just a matter of dealing. I mean, in the end, none of us like to think that we've got anything wrong. None of us like to think somebody's coming up to us saying, hey, you stupid, you've made a mess of this. And it's the hardest thing to do with investment. And it's confirmation bias. We all tend to look for things that confirm our theories and our views and slightly slide away from the things where somebody contradicts us. And I'm guilty of it. We all, it's so-and-so, so-and-so in the paper talking rubbish again. Whereas actually what you should do is really read this. And I avoid Gavin Davis's stuff like the plague in the FT when I really should read it, because he's an incredibly smart guy. Mm-hmm. I just think he talks... I mean, this week his piece on why QE was really good but QT won't make a difference, I just thought... Please.
Yeah.
You know, you can't have it one way and then have it t'other. But I forced myself to read it, and I really, you know, he's a smart man and I have to pay attention. But it is very hard to do sometimes, but it is an important skill. And yeah, when you think you found a stock that you like, you've then got to double check and double check, because, you know, none of us do have a crystal ball, and you do need to check. And Soros has got this discipline where he comes up with a view and then he spends all of his time reading stuff that supports the diametrically opposing view, whether it's bullish or bearish. It's hard to do, but as you say, his record's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous stuff. Okay, so looking at individual stocks, Russ, what are you looking at?
Three that we've looked at before, Keystone Law, and I stress with varying degrees of success, Keystone Law, Quixent, and Medica.
Cool. Keys. So that's a ticker there. Is it Keys?
Keys. K-E-Y-S. Yeah. 125 million market cap. We looked at it in early November and the shares probably went from £4 to £3. And I thought, goodness gracious, mate. Here we go. But there's better news since then. It's actually just about got back to the £4 level. So I'll come back to you on the technicals in a minute. But in terms of the fundamentals, it's a challenger of virtual law firm. It's got its own platform called Keyedin. So the lawyers don't all sit in the same building. They actually are recruited, and then they can work from home, and they actually plug into this network, and they can cross-reference their colleagues. They can draw on a central web of expertise in terms of admin and core resource and skills. But then the company is basically a platform. It takes around 25% of the lawyers' fees. On average, they pull in at least £150,000 a year, and the web is, and the platform's growing very quickly because lawyers are attracted to this low-cost model. They keep an awful lot of the lolly. 75%. They get all of the benefit of this backup and support on the platforms to push their expertise out there. And the firm just put out a full year trading update saying that, you know, we are going to be comfortably ahead of expectations. And the shares have rallied, thankfully, back to around £4 mark. So a good affirmation of the model. So we just need to keep, I mean, the one question on the stock, and I was slightly hearty in mouth when I mentioned it in November, is just the valuation's pretty punchy. You know, 29 times forward for 2018, 26 times forward for 2019, yield of about 2%. So it's the ultimate Momo story. Anybody interested in income or value, move away now, please. Mm-hmm. But if you're a Momo jockey and you like upgrades, this is a stock that's still delivering the upgrades. It's going to probably need to keep on doing that to grow into the multiples over time. But it seems perfectly capable of it. Relatively small market share, dynamic model, potentially industry disruptor, really interesting company.
Yeah, so that was that gap up recently, was it, that news? Yeah, because a big gap
up. That was
up
a trading update this week, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Cool, because it closed one day.
That was looking ugly.
Yeah, well, it closed one at 3.4. Exactly, it closed below the 200-day moving average, and literally gapped up above that from 3.40 to 3.90, so that's quite bullish there. So, bullish
move.
Okay, what's MGP? What's this?
MGP is Medica. Medica. It's a footsie small cap company, about 140 million market cap. We've not covered ourselves in glory with this one. First looked at it north of £2. It's now down in the 120s. And I think the problem, you know, the issue here is, you know, I think the growth has been there. We have just got in at too high a multiple and mistook relative predictability of earnings for relative predictability in safety stock. And it just isn't the case sometimes if you pay too high a price. Remember, this is the radiography and x-ray services provider to the NHS. We know there's a shortage of radiographers in the NHS. This is a company that provides them. And remember, this is also the company that gets paid per scan, per limb, all that all that kind of stuff. And it's just, again, come out with a reassuring trading statement. And I think the good news here is they've met revenue forecasts. They've met hiring forecasts. The number of radiographers has gone from 306 to 362. There's a lot less. There's no talk this time of price pressure from the NHS, and margins are holding up. So the things that have worried people about the stock, you know, NHS funding, price pressure, can they get enough radiographers in? They seem to be, you know, dealing with those, and those are what have held the stock back. They're talking about sales up 16% for 2018, EBITDA margins around 30%, a similar growth rate for 2019, and now you're only paying 14 times earnings for double-digit growth rate on the face of it with a 2.2% dividend yield. So the multiple is now more realistic. The company is delivering. Having made a mess of it, it's certainly not one to throw out, and there's no debt on the balance sheet, so the clock's not ticking. I think it's just a matter of being patient, paid too high a price for it, and therefore paying the price, but it still seems as if the company's starting to deliver.
Yeah, I quite like the chart here. Do you know, like that
it's looking better than it has done for a long time.
Because do you know what? It's now at that sort of key sort of £1.20 level, and now they've had a bit of a positive update. It's tested this level 1, 2, 3, 4, so almost the fifth time now, and it's not gone below this. So it seems like a nice base, maybe, you know, to test. Fingers crossed. Here we go. Okay, so what? And next is QXT.
One, last and possibly a bit least, unfortunately, is Quixent, QXT, AIM, just under £200 million market cap. And it's a really interesting company, gaming technology supplier. It provides the brains or the logic box for things like what we would call fruit machines or quiz machines, bingo machines, casino machines. There are only 5 or 6 big suppliers in the world supplying over 8 million machines. It's one of them. You've got gambling deregulation in the US, in Japan, in Brazil, so it's still a growing market. But they've had a trading update, and their core gaming business is going fine. Increased sales year in the second half. But the gaming monitors business, the old Densitron business, if you remember that from its quoted days, that's coming with flat sales. They're having to reposition the product. They're having to, you know, take out some costs, and it's just held the overall group back. So full-year sales now down at $115 million against consensus of $120 million. Earnings a bit below expectations as well. And the stock got murdered. I mean, it was down about 15-20% on the day. It's gone from 430 to 283. So it's another one where I think the story was good, but we overpaid to get in. Mm-hmm. It's now at about 20 times earnings forwards, 15. The problem is with these companies, once they have one slight setback, they don't tend to have just the one. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to cut and run, reassess, because I think even at 19 times earnings, you've got very little downside protection if anything goes wrong, as has just been proven. So I'm just going to, unfortunately, fold up my tent on this one.
Yeah, and let's be honest, you've got plenty of time to relook at the company now, because it's not going to all of a sudden shoot back up. You know, it's a trading update and notice the results, so you've got plenty of time to reassess and read the full results, you know, and then see what happens, you know.
And at least there's a net cash balance sheet there again, $10 million of net cash. So again, the clock, there's no lender or bondholder breathing all over them, so they've got time to fix the little problem that they've got. But I just think, you know, when we know with these Momo stocks, there are very few worse investments than a growth stock that then doesn't deliver the growth that it's expected when it's on a higher multiple. And, you know, I think there is a slight danger this turns into one of those, at least for a bit. But I think fundamentally the competitive position is good.
Yeah, I mean, if the story is growth, and the, you know, growth is missing from the story, then they haven't
got a
story.
Problem. It's like an income stock that cuts its dividend. You know there's only going to be trouble.
I know, exactly. Marvellous stuff. Well, Ross, any plans for the weekend?
It's a kids, but we're ferrying the kids between parties, basically. That's the day's endeavour. And then on Sunday, my lads' cricket winter net season starts. Season.
Yeah,
in January.
That's
go. Yeah. I know. And he's in the under. He's gone up to the under 10, under 11 squad. So they're moving to a hard ball now.
Okay. Yeah.
It's going to be. So we've had to get all the, you know, pads, helmet, box, kit, you name it. So
yeah.
Our sports vendor Nick Rivett, who's a lovely guy, you know, was delighted to see us. But so that's going to be interesting. I'm talking to the lad who runs the club. He said it's interesting at the under 9s level. Batsmen hold sway when the first summer they move up to the hard ball. Bowlers tend to have their wicked way with everybody, because also they move from, you lose your wicket, you keep batting for your 4 overs and you just take 5 runs off.
Yeah.
This summer, you lose your wicket, you're trudging back to the clubhouse.
Yeah. Do you know what? My son is now scared of hard cricket balls. We're in the garden.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. It's a big test this year.
Well, do you know what I did do? We had for Christmas, one year, he was given a baseball glove and a baseball, you know, and he was at the other end of the garden. He had the glove on. I threw the ball up high, missed him straight in the head, hit him straight above the nose. And now he's terrified of it. He goes cricket lessons, you know, in summer, but now he does not like the hard ball.
No, it's understandable. It's going to to happen. You know, any cricketer will tell you you're going to get the odd broken finger and cracked thumb and chipped nail and whacking the mush and all the rest of it. So
anyway, have a nice weekend, Russ.
And you, Justin, my friend. Talk to you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Emporium Group, MPM. At four, U Group, that's YU dot. At three, 88 Energy, 88E. At two, Mountfield Group. I've not heard of those, but they're 18%. MOGP Mountfield Group. Interesting. What do they do there? New contracts at aggregate demand. I don't know. I'll check them out. But never heard of Mountfield Group. MOGP. And the most followed company is Infrastrata. That's INFA. Okay. Top five most followed companies, or most liked RNSs, I should say. At five, it is Codal Minerals, further high-grade lithium intersections. At four, New Oil and Gas, strategic collaborations support MF Devco. At three, 88 Energy Group, quarterly report. At two, Europe Metals, that's it. Just talked to Lawrence on the podcast, of course, application for removal from the ASX. And number one, most liked RNS came from Asia Met Resources, BFS Drilling, progressing to schedule. There, it's got some good drilling results there. That's ARS ticker, of course. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.